basic Indian Mayavadi idea is it's all one, everything becomes one. Everything merges into one something. You all become God. But what God is, there's no difference. Prabhupada gave a lot of examples on that. Because they say in the, like it, with a material thing, say you have a big pizza, then you cut it into pieces. You don't have the piece anymore, you have pieces. And somehow or other, they're all going to come back. But then, if one person got that right, then everybody has to be. You're all going to cease to exist individually, but you're going to merge into one something. That's a near stage. There'll be no variety. In the material world, variety is called variety is the spice of life. Prabhupada is the mother of enjoyment. Right? You like variety, right? So there's so many fashion dresses, so many different kinds of haircuts, and we all have different body. Variety is interesting. Now everybody more and more wants to travel to every country in the world. Like me, see all the variety of people and languages and buildings. And it's interesting. Variety is the spice of life. Everybody likes to go to Govinda's where they can choose from so many different kinds of food. Right? If you just had one thing, you know, then might be more healthy and cheaper. You know, we like variety, that's natural. But at the same time, then chasing after all that variety, getting confused, getting mixed up, it may cause a lot of distress. So the philosopher might start to think, well, if there's no variety, that would be spiritual. Material is variety. Because we see in the material world so much variety. What they don't know is in the spiritual world, there's much more variety. All of you must have studied enough to know about the spectrum of light. So we see very little of it. You can't see infrared, you can't see ultraviolet. You can only see a few colors. The computer screen says it has 64 million colors, but who can see that? How can you? Right? We see three mixed up. All just a few basic things. Same thing with sounds. We can only hear within a certain range. Dog can hear much beyond that. Same thing with smell. We can very little. We can smell. The dog or most animals, they can smell much better. Even some people, if they live in an environment like that. Soldiers in Vietnam, they learn to go by smell a lot. Because you can't see anything in the jungle. You have to hear better and see better. Otherwise, can't tell what's going on. But anyway, more variety. Spiritual is unlimited variety, much more. Like Krishna's cow, there's so many different colors. Even the people, there's so many different colors. So they say no variety. That would be spiritual, they think. Because in the material world, has variety. We can all see that. And in the material world, we suffer. Therefore, spiritual would mean no variety. So that's the nirvisheshas. Very dangerous. So Prabhupada is always talking about the Mayavadi and smash them. They're absorbed in Maya. And then the other kind of Mayavadi is the Shunyavadi. Generally, that would be the Buddhist. But there's not much difference, except they say that instead of saying everything comes from one and becomes one, say everything comes from nothing and becomes nothing. And some say it really is nothing. You just think it's something. I don't know how what it is that thinks it. So that's the zero body. Shunya means zero. There's one very popular Buddhist sect in Japan called Shin Buddhism. Jodo Shinshu. Jodo is a monk and Shinshu means new religion. But he came up with this. And it's also very popular in China with a different name. And it sounds, when you hear about it, same as Hare Krishna. They chant Buddha's name. They say just simply by chanting the name of Buddha, you can achieve all perfection. Namamida Butsu. Namamida Butsu. Namamida Butsu. And of course, different groups have slightly different ways of pronouncing it. The Chinese one is different. I don't know what that one is. But that's the idea. You should chant the name of Buddha all the time. And then you'll become perfect. You'll be freed of all sins. And they have what they call the Buddha land. Some people call it pure land of Buddhism. And the book, it's exactly like in the Bhagavatam in the third canto, there's one chapter, description of Vaikuntha. This pure land Buddha is just like that. Everything is really nice, and you're with Buddha, and you know, it sounds, you know, chant the name of Buddha, go to pure land Buddhism. And they're all real nice people out of all the Buddhists. Yeah, they're always the most nice. They'll almost always buy our book. Especially if we just start chanting Nam Amida Butsu. They become very happy, then they teach us how to pronounce it. Like Nam Amida Butsu, or, you know, they all got a different way. But ultimately, that is considered still a material attachment we want to enjoy. And the real thing is to go beyond that to nothing. The people are striving for nothing, but then nothing is no such thing. So they become also frustrated. But so Prabhupada, he defined himself. Gauravani Pracharane, you're going to preach the mission of Lord Chaitanya and then, you know, wipe out the not the people, but the philosophy of the Nirvistatius and the Shunyavadis. So people can write and understand that they're part and parcel of Krishna, and they can be with Krishna and associate with Krishna. That is the real goal of life. If we all want relationships, we all want friends, we all want beautiful things, and that's Krishna. Everything is there. So Prabhupada, by Lord Chaitanya, he was traveling in, you know, if you know the history of India, Kali Yuga, the first thing that really came on was Buddhism. And that was Krishna. Because in the name of the Vedas, the Brahmanas were promoting animal slaughter and all kinds of things, and making a business out of so-called yajnas. So Buddha came to confuse the atheists. So he said, forget the Vedas, because the reason was that the so-called Brahmanas had presented the Vedas so wrongly so much that people couldn't get straightened out, you know, by using the Vedas. They said, just forget the Vedas, just follow me. So basically he taught the same principles, ahimsa, you know, compassion, without God and without the Vedas. And that way he got people away from all this being misled by animal slaughter. But they're still considered atheistic because he rejected the Vedas and because he was there was no God in Buddhism. And even now the Buddhists say it's not a religion, it's just a way of life. It's becoming very popular, especially with rich businessmen. America and Europe. I was going on Sankirtan in London, in one very rich shopping street, you know, where they sell pants for £600. Really stupid. And so many of them, they were real nice. They said, oh yeah, I'm a Buddhist. I'm a Buddhist. I meditate. Buddhist. You say, what do you meditate on? Nobody can tell you. But they do. They do some stuff. And they like it because there's no surrender, there's no God. There's no... And the modern Buddhists don't teach all the Buddhist principles. No intoxication, no gambling, no illicit sex. No... They got everything. They actually have five main ones. And some of them have even more of the monks. The Buddhist monks in Thailand, they have a couple hundred precepts. You're not supposed to wear a watch. But now they all have mobile phones. That's not in the list, you know. activated it. So then Shankaracharya came, Lord Shiva, sent by Krishna, and he preached Mayavadi but with the Vedas. And he confused the Vedas, but he got the Vedas back into the mainstream and more or less drove all the Buddhists out of India. So now we have Buddhism all over Asia. Then Lord Chaitanya, there were still Buddhists, and Lord Chaitanya described he was going around and he was defeating all the Buddhists. It listed in Chaitanya Charitamrita the 9 basic arguments of the Buddhists, and then they're defeated. And it's all very confusing. Buddhist arguments are very confusing. It's their main thing, is to confuse everyone. Keep the mind very, very busy. But a real Buddhist, at least, you know, they have principles. And they're good people. So anyway, Lord Chaitanya was defeating them, and so some Buddhists were not happy. So they brought him a big plate of what they said was prasad or something. Big platter. And it was really, it doesn't say, but it must have meat in it or something. And just as he was going to eat some, a big eagle bird came and picked it up in its claws and flew high in the sky. And all the food dropped on top of the Buddhist. Then he dropped the plate and it landed on the head of the chief of the Buddhists. So he was knocked out like he was dead. And the Buddhists, they were so bewildered, they all came to Lord Chaitanya asking for help. So he told them the Maha Mantra and said, you have to chant this for your teacher. So they all went and they did kirtan for the teacher. And then he was revived. It says Lord Chaitanya initiated all the Buddhist students and then they initiated their guru. In this way he was defeating everyone and spreading his message. So Prabhupada's been doing that also. Most people in the world are more or less some sort of Mayavadi without any real understanding of it. Even the mainstream Christian religions, which are very, very personal in their scripture, Judaism, Muslim also, but if you trace back historically, somehow or other, you know, the effect of Shankaracharya's preaching reached them also. Because the monks from India would travel and like from Greece, they would go to India, and they got contaminated with the Mayavadi, and it entered into their religion. So they basically become Mayavadi also. God can't be described, you can't know him, you can't see him, you can't, you know, not a person. Everything is all right. Yatamat Tattapat. Famous Mayavadi in India taught that. Yatamat Tattapat. Whatever you think is okay, whatever I think is okay. Everything is okay. No arguing. Peace. I'm all right. One psychiatrist in America wrote a book. I'm okay, you're okay. You can do whatever you want, unless you try to steal my stuff. Right? They'll say you can do whatever you want. So this, it's all one Mayavadi. We deal with a lot. There's several stories of devotees. Gurudas Prabhu was in the Kumbh Mela. And there was one Mayavadi preaching away like anything. So Gurudas said, so one thread of your blanket is the same as the whole blanket, isn't it? Oh yes, yes. Of course. He said, all right, I'll take the blanket and you take one thread. So in front of everybody, he said, oh yes. Then he came the night and said, I need my blanket, you know, it's cold. But he said, it's all one. Thread is the same. It's simultaneously one and different. It's the same, like a drop of water is the same quality, but it's not the same. You can't take a bath with one drop or just satisfy your thirst with one drop of water. You need more. Another time a devotee was preaching to some, there was a hippie guy in America or something. And he said, all right, you give me all your money, and it's the same if I have it or you have it, right? And he was in front of many people, so in order to, you know, show that he really believed his argument, he said, okay, and he gave him the money. But then he came to the temple later and said, I want my money back. I need it. And Prabhupada liked that. Another time, they were invited, the first group of devotees traveling around India. It was some sort of a Gita Samhita or something. So Prabhupada had Buddha speaking. And he was talking about that we like variety. We don't think that everything is, we can't. Practically, it's not all one. So he said, just like when you're eating, you want a nice rasgulla or laddu or something. You don't want stool. So they got really disturbed. How can you talk like that? How can you say that? You know, and they kicked him off of speaking. And they came to Prabhupada to complain later. And Prabhupada said, I'm sorry, you know, these Americans, they're kind of gross and low class. Sometimes they say things that aren't very nice. Then he asked him after they left, he said, what did you say? And he told him, Prabhupada, that's a good one. But then they'll say, well, that's in the material world, of course, but in the spiritual, there's no variety. They can't show any example. Now, the main way to defeat them is to, they will chant usually, they like kirtan. Of course, the really hardcore Mayavadi will never change, you know, like scientists. And if you, any of you study science, probably a lot of modern physics is more or less just Buddhism. Everything comes from nothing, right? How can that be if something comes from nothing? They can't show any example anywhere. There's no example of nothing, right? Even in the most far out, remote outer space or something, you know, they can see it with their instruments. But they'll still say like that, everything came from nothing. I heard once they have a 25-page formula to describe nothing. One boy in a university in Durban, I think it was, South Africa, he said he was been around devotees for a long time, but he was one of these guys that's got to study everything, you know, and didn't surrender. So he said, you know, the Buddhists, they write really extensively about nothing. I said, how can you write extensively about nothing? Nothing. It should be simple. He said, I don't know, but they do it. Go on and on and on. They describe nothing. There was a cartoon of the Dalai Lama on his birthday. Anybody ever see that one? He's opening a box, big box, and all the monks are watching. And he said, wow! Nothing. Just what I've always wanted. So, if a monk that promotes this nothing, nothing came to you and was hungry, and you gave him a plate, empty plate, would he say, oh, thank you very much. You've satisfied my hunger so nicely. And then he would have to twist his whole philosophy around and say, well, this is material world and this is the material body. But ultimately nothing. It seems like that would be nice to them. They don't have any desires. They don't have any thinking. You know. It's not possible. Who wants to merge into one big whatever it is? You know, nobody wants that. So that's Prabhupada's mission. Spread the holy name. He stressed on that. Don't preach very much to new people, you mean, because they'll get confused and argue. But lots of kirtan, lots of nice prasad, and then when they're peaceful, we can preach. I give them the book, because he said, practically anybody, myself included, if anybody says anything, the first thing you want to do is argue. And especially, no offense, but Hindus, argument they consider like very high religious discussion. Just arguing. I remember one time one of the first times I ever encountered an Indian in the audience. So he said something how, oh yeah, we always heard that Krishna is an incarnation of Vishnu. So I tried, and then he argued, I argued, finally we were arguing like anything. And I thought, oh my God, you know, I've really blown it. But he was so happy, you know, just to argue. He didn't want any conclusion, just argue. We have friends in the Hindu Parishad, and they said, you know, they only talk about feeding the poor and eye clinics and stuff. Because any philosophical thing, everybody will argue. Nobody can agree on it. But that's normal everywhere. No matter what you say or why, if you say anything, she wants to argue. And then when she argues, you want to argue back. And many people end up divorced for no reason that they can't pin down, you know, because of that. Devotees don't like to argue, they just like to talk about Krishna. So, prophets would give them the book because they may argue with you that the book is valuable, but if somehow they take it, when they go to read it, they'll have to think, well, let me see what this is. A little bit submissive. Although some people read it just to find something wrong with it. Mostly, if they take the trouble to open it and read it, they're in a little bit submissive mood. And they won't be in an argument with them so much. And then they'll be better. So Prabhupada stressed, give the book, give the holy name, give prasadam especially. Prasadam, feeding anyone makes them happy, but when it's prasadam, it's like injection. You know, they get Krishna, they can't argue with it. They get it. They hear the kirtan, even if they just don't want to join in, they have to hear it, right? When we go out and chanting publicly, you know, we're forcing people to hear the holy name. Some people might not like it, but still they'll start chanting. They'll go home and say, those stupid Hare Krishnas, they stupid Hare Krishnas, we're chanting Hare Krishna again. And after a while, they'll be chanting also. The wife will say, well, why are you chanting? I'm not chanting. Yes, you are. And actually, some devotees have become devotees like that. Many devotees in Russia, the communists would write books about, you know, how bad religion is. One devotee, he was reading, and the book said, of all the stupid religions, the stupidest one is the Hare Krishna. Because all they do is just chant the same thing all the time. And they're really stupid. And he thought, well, if they're saying the same thing all the time, it might be good, you know. And everybody wasn't too impressed with the government then. They thought if the government's against it, it must be good. Many devotees came. So anyway, anybody hears the holy name, but if they, we had a committee meeting here with the men who built this whole compound, so the richest ones. One of the young guys, he said, you know, I came to the temple because I saw them with the mridanga and singing and dancing. That's what brought him to the temple. Because everyone's a soul and everyone naturally, you know, the spiritual world means singing and dancing. Krishna. Everybody wants to sing and dance. Indian movies are full of songs and dance. Not much Hare Krishna. But the natural thing is we like thing, because that's the activity of the spiritual world. So I'd like to take questions. I know we should get more time to put down a few minutes. But questions are always good. Keeps me in track. Got any questions?
Huh?
I get it. You have to.
Huh?
My what?
Very
little, directly. Mostly I was there when he gave class quite a few times. I was there in the morning walk sometimes. Sitting in the garden sometimes. Personal interaction was very little. When I got the Gayatri Mantra, I was with him for a few minutes. And our Surup Damodar Maharaj, he was sitting at the same time. And I didn't know him at all. He was a student quite far away, and he would just come every morning, go in the morning, walk with Prabhupada, and then that's all I ever saw. lives in a different temple 50 miles away. So Prabhupada asked me, he said, how many are waiting downstairs? I said, I don't know, 10 or whatever it was. And his eyes lit up really bright, and he said, there's one Indian boy? But there, it was the first Indian boy that was surrendering. And I said, I think he's Japanese. Prabhupada. I didn't know any better. He looked Japanese. Manipur is right on the border with China. You know. It didn't look to me like an Indian. I'd never seen an Indian, actually. Except Maharishi Yogi or something. In those days, Indians, America didn't have very many Indians. Now, America has so many Indians have taken over. 36% of the doctors are Indian. 25% of Microsoft is Indian. Something like 13% of NASA, all kinds of things like that. 4% of the population. It's quite amazing. But Prabhupada's time, you know, like, it's like Prabhupada had so much trouble to get the papers. You know, everybody did. And even if they could get, they couldn't bring any money and couldn't change rupees. That was that time. And two times on the morning walk, one time he was talking about this. Usually I just tried to listen and I was always afraid I'd say something stupid, so I didn't want to say anything. And he was talking about this guy named Guru Maharaj. All Yogeshwar. But he was supposed to be this 12-year-old incarnation of Krishna. He's actually in his 20s. And he became very popular. And they would even use the big football stadiums for his rally. And they would build a big seat way in the stadium, and he'd be sitting there with a mukut. Just cheating people like anything. So, sometimes the devotees would talk about him. He said that books were for Kali Yuga, but because of his presence, it was now Satya Yuga, so there was no need for books. In the beginning, we used to go to his places and sell so many Bhagavad Gita, because he talked about Krishna. He'd talk about Bhagavad Gita and they'd all be lined up outside and we'd say, this is Krishna, you know, Bhagavad Gita, what he talks about all the time. And they'd all buy it. But then they found out that we were out there. So they came out with big megaphones and they called them premies. All right, premies, don't take those books. Stand in line, get inside, don't take the books, don't take the books. And then we couldn't sell any more books. Finally, he fell down and mother rejected. The brother was supposed to be Balaram, and the mother said, actually the brother was Krishna. Then he was suing his mother, and they told Prabhupada, he said, she should have killed him in the womb. If Krishna didn't have to sue Putana. Anyway, something he said, so I said something about Prabhupada turned around and he started to shout something. I thought he was mad at me, so I just backed off. Later on, after I listened to many Prabhupada's conversations, I realized he was trying to have a conversation. He wanted me to take the one side. He would smash the argument. But at that time, I didn't know, so I did. And then this group made vegetarian restaurants called Prasad House. Somebody was saying, oh, Prabhupada, even they, you know, they made vegetarian restaurants. Like, Prabhupada stopped and said, see, even he helps us. At least he's promoting vegetarianism. Other than that, one time, Prabhupada came to Chicago and it was really chaos. And that was when we were installing four or five new Radha-Dhamma buses. Born in Italian, Prabhupada was there, and Lockridge has something like 75 new lockers to get initiated, and, you know, there's total chaos. And Prabhupada was meeting, you know, devotees came from all over, you know, from Detroit and from everywhere, and reporters were there. And so Prabhupada was doing something, writing and book reading, and Tamal Krishnaraj introduced me. Said, this is Kavi, one of our bus leaders. Prabhupada went, that was it. So I said, well, I don't want to bother him anyway. But, you know, I knew my position then. That's very important. And that was good. But otherwise, we saw Prabhupada, you know, always ecstatic, always concerned about everyone, always on time to greet the deities. Never. He went on a morning walk every day, but he would make sure to be back to greet the deities. Even devotees would say, well, Prabhupada, you can stay longer. You know, can't keep Krishna waiting. One time we were dressing the deities and we were a little bit late, and Prabhupada was waiting. And then he knocked on the door. And the temple president panicked, and there were so many flowers and everything right on the floor right in front of Gornatai. He just took a big broom and pushed everything and opened the door. Pushed everything in front of Radha and Krishna. And then started panicking over there and moved everything in front of Jagannath. Prabhupada happily greeted the deity. That was the only day we were late. He was always there on time, and he greeted all the deities very, like, they always like this. Clap, dadabad. And he would give ecstatic class. After the class would be kirtan. You know, nobody does that anymore. There's always kirtan after the class. Prabhupada would play the gong. And we'd get all the kids to dance. And every time you move that gong stick, the kid would jump. And you had them all under control. They were all small then. The oldest kids were like 8 years old. Most of them were 4 or 5 years old, 3 years old. Give everybody a cookie. Started out just for the kids to cook. Then, of course, everybody wanted it. They started cooking more and more cookies. So I guess it became a big thing to give everybody. One time in New Vrindavan, this is in Lilamrita, but probably had to go up the hill. They couldn't even get the car up there. And go up. So it packed up. I don't know, I heard some say Prabhupada was looking, asking for prasadam. Radhanath Swami was Pujaridhan, and he just brought the plate right off the altar and gave it to Prabhupada. So Prabhupada took the spoon and he, like, cut a little piece off the gulab jamun and gave that to somebody, and cut a rajshubha and gave it to somebody, a little juice and gave it. And that way he was distributing it to all. Everybody was there. Anyway, that my main association with the book, reading the book, distributing the book. I was telling last week, Prabhupada's disappearance. I think it might have been the first time I ever went door to door, but I actually got in. Somehow or other, I just got this feeling that Prabhupada was with me. I was a very new devotee, but, you know, you get special mercy. And I was thinking, this is such a nectaring thing that I could introduce these people to Prabhupada. I really believe that Bhakti Gandhi was Prabhupada. I was really happy. And then gradually, I never felt like that again. I just got into the passion of selling books and, you know, whatever we have to do to sell books. I mean, I had the understanding basic, but I didn't have that feeling so much. But then after Prabhupada left, after we found out in the morning, it was early in the morning, and we cried a lot, we chanted that Jayanino Premadana over and over and over again. I didn't want to tell anybody what happened. I was a temple president, so I just started singing that song, and then everybody, you know, everybody understood what happened. A long time, many hours, and then So finally, I went out to distribute books. I didn't know what else to do. And I was thinking, personally for me, there would be not much difference because I was never really with Carl Five very much. Especially the last few years, I was always traveling in different places. And so I thought, for me, you know, I read the books, distribute the books, I do the reviewing on it. Really not much different. Then I was thinking about, for the society, what a big difference. And heavy. Because Prabhupada was always there, no matter what happened, to straighten us out. If devotees didn't agree about something, he would give the answer. And if, you know, if anybody didn't want to accept it, they would just have to go away. And they couldn't argue. They would argue, but when Prabhupada said, this is the way it is, and that's the way it was. So, and that was quite nice. There's only one guru, no confusion about anything, you know, no bad history. Of course, many of the bad things that happened in this time happened when Prabhupada was there also. Because all kinds of people joined. But then I was distributing books, and I had that same feeling again, and Prabhupada was right there, and then he thought, very good, you're distributing books. So I felt very happy. And I've tried to distribute books ever since, whenever I get a chance. Of course, now at my age, I have to pray more that I can inspire some young people to distribute books. Because it does take a lot of physical energy. But it's not a physical activity, actually, it's a spiritual thing. Success is through the consciousness. I don't know if you ever met Vijay Prabhu, he's our Sankirtan minister. So he's basically only distributed books for more than 30 years. And it's amazing. He says exactly the same thing to everyone, no matter what country he's in. And if they stop, they always take the book. He's so convinced. He gets up and chants all the drums. Studies, and he goes out. Now he sits at a table on the campus. And I watch the same thing he says to everyone, same picture he shows them, the same thing. But it's a mantra. You know. And it gets right through whatever people are in, they just become fascinated. So he keeps up his pace. Trying to get printing costs. Printing costs is $10. I'm a monk. Anything else you give will be a donation to help you. And, okay, I'll give 15. I'll give 20. I'll give 10. I go and everybody's got only 5. They want the book, though. Anyway, Prabhupada is present in the book. The book is not different. And the service is not different. He's there for everyone, and he's present in any of his followers, whether they're direct disciples or not. Direct Diksha disciples. There won't be many of us around, you know, in 20 years. Some of us are predicted for a little longer. But the movement, Prabhupada is the founder of Charya, that will go on forever, but strongly for 10,000 years. Then it's probably we'll have to go more into hiding. You know. But even at the time of Kalki, they're still Vaishnavas. They're hiding out in the mountain caves and like that. But now, by the mercy of the democracy, they're all crazy. Prabhupada said, demon crazy. I was in one shop in Bali, Indonesia, and the television was on, and I could see it was something mocking the government. It was quite obvious. I couldn't understand it, but then the sign came up, Demo Crazy. It's a very popular TV show. Demo Crazy. democracy is crazy. Now they just had an American election, and I would see the headlines. And of course, being from America, and you know, you, every once in a while you want to see what's going on. But the only thing I could compare it to is this professional wrestling. Everybody watch that? Have that in India? You know, and it's just a big show. One guy acts really bad, and he insults all the rest of them, and talks about how he's going to smash everybody, and it's all rigged. You know, the guy who wins is just the one who's the most popular by vote. He gets all the money, and he can be the world champion. The fighting is choreographed, and because otherwise they'd kill each other within 5 minutes. The things that they do. So the whole democracy we saw from Mr. Bush, it's not exactly goes by the vote. You know, if the vote goes different than what somebody wants, then something happens. So he became the president. And it's all controlled by Durga, actually. 50-50, Pralaya, Sadhana Shakti. Creation, maintenance, and destruction is all under the will of Durga. And she's servant of Krishna. Ultimately Krishna. So we just carry on with our, you know, trying to rescue people, trying to save them from this, you know, mind control of all these advertisements. Things that they're trying to sell you, right? How to dress up and look beautiful. How to get rich. How to party all night and work 30 hours a day. Mode of passion and ignorance. Work hard in the mode of passion, party in the mode of ignorance, right? Isn't that? What's the party? Get drunk. You know, act stupid. Can't remember anything the next day. It must have been great. Can't remember anything. Work hard. Japan and stuff. Everywhere. Like skyscraper buildings going up everywhere. Motive, passion. Then what do they do when they get finished? They live in those skyscrapers, in the big hotel. In Kali Yuga, that, you know, in Maya, the desert is sprouting into the golf course, and millions of go to the Middle East, and inconceivable. 30 years ago, there was nothing there. Now there's millions of skyscraper buildings, traffic jams, golf courses, everything. So this is, they're worshiping Maya, and she rewards them. But they're not becoming happy. Nobody, only devotees are becoming happy. Prabhupada, one time someone asked Prabhupada, what about if a devotee thinks that karmis are happier than devotees? Prabhupada said, he's not a devotee. Didn't hesitate. No discussion. Then he doesn't understand anything. They may have their big smile and they may think everything is great, but they're not really happy. If they were happy, why do they have to drink? Why do they have to chase around so much? Why do they have to go to psychiatrists and spend huge money, take antidepressant medicine? They're not happy. Only devotees are happy. If they know they're the soul, no, they're not the body. But we don't know the body is distressed. We can live with it. It's always distressed. Any other questions?
Yeah. What does Srila Prabhupada say about Varnashram? What is it for doing about
it? Wow. That's a pretty big discussion. But basically, Prabhupada did say, said a lot about Varnashram. But, you know, traditional bar notch, I mean, so we can't expect to implement that in coming years. But daily bar notch, everything, everyone doing what they like to do and what they're good at, centered around Krishna. Daily bar notch. That's basically. And we're certainly not doing enough. And Prabhupada was talking about it quite a bit at the end of his life. And Abhiram Prabhu said, they finally asked him, what do you mean by Varnashram? Because he was talking about going to that Gita Nagari farm. He said, I will go stay there and I will teach them to live off the land. So that was kind of his definition. So, in one sense, the Daivi Varnashram we're doing pretty good, you know, spreading the holy name and prasadam and books. And we're getting some communities that are coming together quite all right. As far as the real living off the land side, we're really behind. And it requires a big change of consciousness, you know, because simple living, high thinking. In Africa, the devotees are mad after, you know, modern things. Most of them come from the village, which is pretty varnashram. And they all know how to farm. They don't want to do it. Same thing in India, especially in Bengal. But nobody wants to really farm. You know, they did that. They were trained in school. Like, I know when I went to school, a big insult was to call someone a farmer. You know, even though we can't live without farmers. Somehow or other, the television, everything is promoting that farmers are really stupid. Actually, it takes a lot of, to be a farmer is really difficult. So that we have to really work on. It is happening in some places. More in the previous communist places. They're more inclined for that kind of living. So like in Kazakhstan, the devotees were doing a lot of farming and they were food self-sufficient. Except in the winter, sometimes they had to buy things, but the money came from what they surplus that they sold in the summer. But the government's taking it all away. They have no. But so some places it's going on, but we do need to think about it. In Africa, in their letterhead, they had that simple living and high thinking. But none of them wanted, you know, I said, you should change it to simple thinking and high living, you know, be truthful. Because it just becomes a farce, you know. It looks attractive. But people all over the world are looking for alternative life, you know, to get away from the Father Kham says that they'll be running from the city in Kali Yuga because of it. And that's happened in some places. In Japan, there's many villages that were abandoned because everybody moved to the city, you know, to pursue whatever they saw on television about the city. Where everybody's very beautiful and everybody has a German car and, you know, everything is so nice. And the police are shooting all the bad guys. And some people ran away from the city and just moved into those villages because the houses and everything and started farming. And the government had to finally go and, you know, put some infrastructure in there for the people. So even now it's happening, but not enough. You know. India, we have in Bombay so many people living on the footpath, they just came from the village. But due to Kali Yuga, it's not raining in the villages. You know, all kinds of things are happening. So, the Daivi Varnashram is the essence of it. That's why we also talked about that. We have to keep that in mind. And so the preaching work is part of Varnashram, and it is an essential part, because the more and more people we get, then we can do more. And devotees, you know, we have our own businesses and devotees that can hire devotees. And devotees can work amongst themselves more and more and then live more of a varnashram kind of life. don't want to get into the caste system of, you know, what modern people think Varnashram is. You know, I'm a Brahmin and you're not. Touch my feet. You know, we don't want to think like that. For devotees, Daivi Varnashram, everyone is a Vaishnava. But we make it the work of different Varnas because you need that. It doesn't mean you are a Sudra, or you are a Vaishnava, you're a Vaishnava, you're a Vaishnava. You have to know that first. And when we all really know that, and we all respect everybody, we respect everyone else's work as part of the whole, that's Varnashram. Everybody's part of the whole, everybody's important. You can live without your legs, but you know, it's not as nice. So we could live without Sudras and ones in the Brahmanas. But if there were only Brahmanas, who would support them? Right? Who would have them to their home for yoga? Who would give them the donation? Right? Then they'd have to go to work. And some of them would have to become something else. So, but Vaishnava is all Brahman. That way we can live very nice. Okay? What's the time now? Everybody's renounced? No watch? Huh? Everybody's a Buddhist monk? Huh? 5:45. That's supposed to be the end time. A little more? Yeah? Mercy is just, you know, something that you have to take from mercy. And the mercy is that people will teach you how to serve Krishna, what you have to do, and then you have to do it. If you don't want to do it, then there's no mercy because you don't care for the mercy. Right? So endeavor attracts mercy. Mercy and trust, you know, and mercy will help you to endeavor more. So we need the mercy of the devotees, and we need the mercy of Krishna. And we have to endeavor. So chant the holy name, especially. But in a service mood, that is the, you know, chanting means, my dear Lord, please engage me in your service. So, chanting in a service mood, wanting to surrender, wanting to really give everything to Krishna, even though we can't do it right away, but knowing that that's what we want to do, and praying to Krishna. And then the more we try to give that mercy also, tell others whatever we know, and try to inspire others to chant, then we get more mercy that Krishna gives. We have to take it. Can't be. It's not like, oh, give me mercy, you know. You have to do something. Okay?
What?
If you have more time, can I ask one more question?
Yeah, I have time, but.
As Prabhupada said, that his movement will.
What?
As Prabhupada said, this movement, that is Arishta movement,
yeah,
will flourish till 10,000 years. So it is just that one has to come in and take the verse of Srila Prabhupada and just do his service to Srila Prabhupada. But sometimes I feel that I am not that one. I am I don't have so much power to serve Srila Prabhupada.
Well, that's humility. But that's good.
Thank you, Dave.
Huh?
Exactly. I'll do some.
Yeah, humility. The devotee always thinks, you know, that he's not so good. That's good. I think that. Some will run away and think, oh, not for me. But... And the mind is what it is, and it's trained up in so many ways. So that's why we need the association of devotees to carry us through our different gifts and also regulated life of whatever, some kind of service, so that because it becomes a habit, and we, even we don't feel like it, we'll do it. Like a student, they may not always love to study, but if they want to graduate, then they'll study. So devotee, you know, we may not always have an ecstatic taste for the holy name, for instance. But if we know that if we have a little bit of faith, then we'll chant anyway, and then that faith will come. And if we see other devotees, how it's working for them and how they're making advancement. Everybody started out somewhere, but a Mahabhagava considers himself to be not a devotee. Everyone else is a devotee. The most advanced devotee doesn't think of himself as a devotee. The very, very neophyte, he thinks, I'm the best devotee. There's no one like me. I can't even go to the temple because all the other people, they're not really devotees. I have to stay home because there's no one as good a devotee as me. That's the neophyte, Maha neophyte, Maha Kanishka. But even such a person, by mercy, can make them. They go to the temple thinking, well, I'm going to show them all. But they'll get some prasad, and there'll be a kirtan, and they'll get a kirtan. All of us sometimes think, I'm the greatest devotee, or someone like me. And sometimes we might think, I'm the worst devotee. My godbrother Vishal had a very friendly relationship with Srila Prabhupada. He's a very jovial type guy. You might, if you've been to Vrindavan or Mayapur, he's about this big, and he's always selling books. So he would always greet Prabhupada and say something, you know. So one day he said, Prabhupada, I'm the most fallen. And Prabhupada looked at him and said, you're not the most anything. Another time he was, started just saying all kinds, he would wait for Prabhupada after the walk or something. Started to say all kinds of things about how great Prabhupada was. Prabhupada said, why don't you do something practical? But he does, he's always distributing books wherever he goes, even though he's about 70 years old. Huh?
What is interfaith?
Interfaith. Well, interfaith just means different religious groups get together and try to share, should mean that they're trying to share their common. It's becoming more and more productive, actually. That I see it greatly due to the influence that Srila Prabhupada, because he always stressed that all religion is. Love of Godhead and all that. He never claimed that my way or the highway, everyone else is wrong. And, you know, he just said the followers are not very good. So they're looking, trying to look more and more at the similarities and coming together more and more. And it's good. Sharing. Devotees organize it sometimes. There's a big one in Mayapur coming. End of the month, November. So, United, I can't remember, but Sparsworth Damodar Marge was one of the founders of that. You know, everybody can appreciate Bhaktivinoda Thakur.